Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Life, Love, Marriage, Divorce, the podcast. I'm your host, Monique Davis-Dotz, and I have a very special guest with me today by the name of Andrea Rogers. She is from Houston, Texas, a life coach. She's just like me. She's a psychology major, so y'all gonna get a lot of good stuff today, right? And she's a Christian and a mother of some amazing children, and I am extremely happy to invite you to the show. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to be here. We were just saying it feels like we've known each other for so long, and we actually just met, but
I know
when you're connected in the spirit, you're connected
in
the spirit.
You are connected in the spirit. Speak it again. It's so crazy. We both have a mutual friend who we both adore by the name of Niles Dillard.
Yes.
And so, Niles, I'm shouting out to you. Thank you for giving me a new sister friend.
Thank you.
And so Niles called me up and he's like, hey, I need you to, you know, I want you to meet one of my good friends. Y'all have a similar story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. And I think that you guys need to connect. And I'm like, okay. And so I'm so happy that he did. And we met, we talked on the phone. We talked on the phone for like, girl.
Over an hour.
Yes. Our introductory conversation was over an hour and really could have went longer.
Yeah.
Right. But we're like, okay, we have kids. We got to go. And so, and then you were flying out to California, I believe,
yes.
For, was a convention, a life coach convention.
It was a retreat. Mm-hmm. I work with a lady named Dr. Sherry Keffer, and she does retreats for women who are recovering from, intimacy betrayal or
right.
betrayal trauma in
right.
their marriages. And so I facilitate groups for her retreat. So I was actually flying to California for a retreat, which I'll be doing again next week, too.
Awesome, awesome. And so I was like, oh, my gosh, when you come back, you got to tell me all about it. I want to know what happened. And you called me, and you was like, hey, I'm back in town. And so we met in person. And when I tell you, and look, you really... We've just known one another. I want to say it's what, maybe a month?
Maybe.
Just hitting a month.
Yeah.
It feels like I've known you all my life.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And so I invited Andrea to the show because we do have similar stories in connectivity and just in being life coaches, Christian psychology majors, women who are divorced.
Moms.
Yeah, exactly. And she has so much to offer. And, you know, this show is about how do you overcome something, or if you're going through something when once we got to the other side, or because we have and doing mm-hmm. our work, how can we help somebody else going through it mm-hmm. and encourage them? And you have such a beautiful spirit
Thank you.
I know you will be able to bless somebody who's listening today. So you went to Lamar High School.
Yes.
Born and raised in Houston, Texas.
Born and raised, proud Houston Texan all my life.
All your yes. life. See, some of us can't say that. I just claim it. I claim it. And then you went to, you are in Aggie, Texas
A&M.
I am
Giggum.
So Giggum.
I am an Aggie. I'm also a Cougar. I have a master's from U of H. But, you know, once you bleed maroon, you just kind of bleed maroon.
You bleed
forever.
Maroon.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And,
yes.
and you're a Cougar as well. Okay, but we're gonna keep the Giggum here for now. Now, tell me about why did you go into psychology?
I think I've always had a gift for helping people. I've always been one of those people that people just want to tell me things.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, and you're shaking
I'm
your
shaking
head.
I'm shaking my head because I'm, yes.
Yes, yes. So you're like, even when I don't want to know, they want to tell me.
Exactly.
And for a long time, it bothered me because I'd
why?
Be like, why do they want to tell me these things?
Uh-huh.
But then once I realized like, oh, this is an area God has gifted me
yes.
in and that I really enjoy helping people.
Yes.
My original goal was to be a psychiatrist.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do. But once I got into the sciences and things at A&M, I was like, maybe I just want to be a psychologist. Maybe medical school
yeah.
is not my thing.
Exactly.
But I am so fascinated with the way God has made our minds
mm-hmm.
and how intricately connected our minds and our bodies and our spirits and all of that
mm-hmm.
are. I could just talk about psychology all day. I love it.
I find it so fascinating. And I think that people who are givers naturally kind of go in that direction of wanting to help people and wanting to figure it out. And I too was blessed to be able where people would always come to me for advice. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it can be a lot of work.
Yes.
But you know, when God has anointed you with a gift, mm-hmm. you really want to use it for good, you know, if that's what he purposed us for. And I know that you definitely have it. And that's why I was like, okay, this is my sister for life, I swear. Okay, so now tell me a little bit about A&M. You enjoyed your time there?
I did. I was just telling someone yesterday that it really prepared me for this world that we live in. Mm-hmm. A&M at that time had like 50,000 students and less than 1% black.
Wow.
So here, you know, I'm coming from Houston, mm-hmm. a big diverse city, and I've always had a diverse group of friends. But to go from that to this small town, you know, city that's built on all these traditions, and to be even more of a minority than I was in my everyday life, it was just really a wake-up call to the ways of the world,
mm-hmm.
and to not be ignorant that race matters,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't learn how to navigate that, it can be a stumbling block your whole life. So I feel like the gift that A&M gave me was mm-hmm. training me and preparing me to go out into the world and deal with hard issues around race.
Mm-hmm. So with the percentage as low as it was, it kind of forced you to get along with people that were different from you and them the same.
Yes.
And to figure out where you had common ground.
Yes.
Instead of just looking at a black and white issue. Not to say that every day you don't wake up and you know what color you are.
Right.
Or they don't know what color they are. But to kind of understand one another. Is that what I'm getting from you when you say that it prepared you?
Well, just that you can have good intentions. I mean, my mom was very intentional about putting us in environments where there was a diverse group of people. So
mm-hmm.
I've always had friends of different ethnicities and races and backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't so much the issue, but just that there is still a lot of hatred
mm-hmm.
around race. And mm-hmm. up to that point, because I had been in Houston in such a diverse environment, I can't say that I had really tasted the ugliness of mm-hmm. racism until I got to A&M. I got to A&M. I, you know, had little splashes of it.
Really?
But there, it was different. And I mean, I loved my time there,
mm-hmm.
but I had to kind of go through a healing after I left A&M.
Really?
In fact, yes, because it's so beloved,
mm-hmm.
and rightfully so. It's a great school. I will never regret my time there.
Yeah.
But there's this unwritten thing that the traditions and all these things, like, that doesn't include me.
I see what you're saying.
Right. Yes.
And when you come from a city that's diverse, where you get along with everyone and it is inclusive.
Yes.
When you go somewhere.
Yes.
That have established traditions
mm-hmm.
that didn't include someone like you.
Right.
They're going by what they know.
Right.
And you're like, well, why am I not included?
Right.
And I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I met some great people there.
Yeah.
I still have lots of friends there.
Yeah.
I take my kids there to go visit. So I have no hatred for A&M.
Right.
Like I said, it just
prepared you
for
some of the people that you will come encountered with later on in life.
Oh, yeah.
I would say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right out of A&M, my first job, my first boss. I questioned about race because I'm like, I noticed the structure of the company. There was a lot of diversity at like entry level management positions, but not beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it was Q&A time, when I first started, they asked, you know, who had questions. And that was my question was, you know, what was the barrier that was keeping people of color from reaching these higher level management positions?
Well, I'm sure they weren't too excited about that question. Who is she asking questions?
Exactly. That's exactly how.
But you did.
I did.
And it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you can't say anybody have any questions except about race. Like, don't ask that question. And I've never been afraid to ask hard questions, which is why I like being a life coach, right? That's what we do. We ask hard questions. But it definitely got me. They moved me around so much. I moved to like most people that were in my, they call it business college. Mm-hmm. Most people that were in my business college got to a store and they started there and they stayed at that store. They moved me around to 6 stores within my first year, and horrible stores.
Are you serious? All
the worst stores. So, I think they were sending me a message,
right?
That they did not appreciate my question.
So you went to 6 different stores in the worst areas.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So I'm surprised they even hired you.
Well, at that point, I was already on board.
Oh, you're already on board.
Yeah, I was already on board. So. Okay. You know, they couldn't fire me, but they could make my life miserable.
So that you could quit. So you didn't quit.
I didn't quit, no. And, you know, God has a way of taking everything that's meant for your demise and using it for your good. Because in traveling around to those 6 stores, I ended up meeting some amazing people and making friends and building relationships with so many people. That get this, at the end, when I finally finished my training, because they knew I had endured all these hard stores, they basically came to me and said, you pick. You get to pick where you want to go.
Are you serious?
Yes. So I got to say, this is the store I want to go to, and I want this person to come work with me.
You could build your team.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But to have that kind of spirit to say, okay, I'm being tested, but I'm not going to give up.
Yeah.
I mean, you have you always had this kind of faith and strength to rely on the Lord?
Well, I didn't get saved until I was 23.
Okay.
So it was not.
It wasn't even that.
I didn't even recognize it as the Lord. Of course it was. He was always with me.
Yeah.
But I think just it's how I came here. It's how God made me from the time I was born. I mean, my mom would say as a kid, like I would just say these things or do these things and they would look at me like, who is this kid? Mm-hmm. You know, just mature and responsible.
Wisdom beyond wisdom.
Yeah, wisdom.
Also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so it was just innate.
Yes.
Okay, I get it. Trust me, I'm looking in the mirror.
Right.
Right. I'm like looking in the mirror here.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we had the same mom and we don't know it.
Well, you know.
I know. I'm sure our mothers would know. But maybe if it was the daddy.
Yeah, that's like mama's baby, daddy's maybe.
Oh, boy. But, okay. So, but you had it in you. You were just strong-willed and knew that, okay, I am going to finish the task that's given to me. Mm-hmm. And because of it, you were rewarded greatly.
Mm-hmm.
But it was basically the Lord with you.
Yes.
And then you were able to really get to know God. So you said you became saved at 23.
Yes.
How did you come in to make that decision?
There were little stepping stones all along the way. When I was in high school, my very best friend got baptized, and I went to her baptism. And I remember thinking, like, wow, I don't know what that is or what it represents, but, like, I like it.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated college, I started going to a church, joined the singles group. And one day after when I was in college, I was very much like, okay, I'm going to graduate by this day and I'm going to get this car and have this job and this amount of money.
I'm looking around like, where'd you come from? That was my little to-do list too. Yes. Like, okay, I'm going to get married and we're going to have such and such kids.
Right.
But what girl doesn't do that, right?
Right. But, you know, after I'd done all that, after I got the job and the money and the car and I had my own place, I was still miserable.
Yeah.
I was miserable.
Really?
I was miserable.
Why do you think you were miserable? You checkmarked your list off.
Yeah, but we know.
I know. Joy. This is for the listening audience.
Right. Joy, true joy, only comes from the Lord. Everything else is temporary.
Amen.
And so one day in my bedroom, I just said, Lord, and this is me. I don't even know his name, but I'm saying, God, I'm miserable. I don't know what is going on. But
so you weren't really in relationship with him, but you knew of him.
Yes.
That's where we are, right?
Yes.
So you knew it was something missing.
Yes.
That with all the things that you checked off your list, still not satisfied. So maybe I need to call someone else that I don't know, but I want to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because like I said, I had been going to church. I was very involved in the singles group. And at this point, I'm one of six, and my oldest sister had gotten saved. And on both sides of my family, very strong Christian background. I just didn't grow up in a Christian home. And so that day when I cried out, I felt like the Lord said, give your life to me. And so, you know, being ignorant, I didn't realize, like, right there in my bedroom. I could have said, okay, Lord. But the next morning, I got up and went to church, and as soon as they said, you know, our old school church, like the doors of the church are open, I was literally running down that aisle. I was gone, and I call it beginning my love affair with the Lord, and I haven't stopped.
You haven't stopped.
I haven't stopped.
Isn't that amazing? Now, in that establishing your relationship with the Lord, you also met a young man that you would come to marry. Tell me about that. How did you meet, now we will say, your ex-husband?
Yeah.
But how did you meet him?
My sister used to work at the same store that we did. She worked there first in high school.
Okay.
And one day she came home and she said, I met a man that could be your husband.
Wow.
And I was like, why would you say that? She said, I don't know, something about him, you know, I think he would be somebody you like. And then when I started working there, people kept saying, have you met this person? Have you met this person? And I'm like, what is it about this person that everybody thinks I need to meet him? And unbeknownst to me, they were doing the same thing to him. Like, hey, have you met the new girl? So people, I think, saw something in us that could be connected. And so we met. He was in a relationship, I was too. And you know, it's like when you've eaten and you go somewhere, no matter how good the food is, you're not hungry. So he wasn't hungry, I wasn't hungry. You know, it was both kind of like But after I got out of my relationship and I saw him again, I thought, well, he actually is kind of cute.
Yeah.
You know, and I can see why people would think he'd be somebody I'd be interested in. And then it just kind of went from there.
Okay. Because he's out of relationship by now. And so then you guys get together.
Right.
Tell me about it. How was it when once you guys decided, hey, we're going to take it to the next, to this next relationship commitment? How was it in the beginning?
That's an interesting question because now I have, you know, a different perspective, right?
Okay. But, no, we're right there because it's going to lead to you telling me what happened.
Right. So in the beginning, I thought it was just the fairy tale. We could talk for hours. We enjoyed all the same things, so much so that when I went to his apartment the first time, I kind of had a freak out moment because I went in his bathroom and it was almost exactly like mine.
Really?
Like down to the toothpaste.
Oh my gosh.
The shower curtain, the color combinations.
Really?
The towels. His bedroom looked like my bedroom in terms of comforter. And I was like, this is weird.
So you have a twin, a male twin at this point.
That's what I'm thinking. Yes. I'm thinking, wow.
Okay.
You know, finally, and our conversations were just so intellectually stimulating that I felt like, wow, you know, I'm hitting it on every level. So he's attractive. He's intelligent. He's got a good job. We work for the same company.
So you're like, ding, 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 yes, ding, this is all yes. going to work out.
Yes. And I had never, honestly, I had never felt about anybody the way I felt about him. Like, I was like schoolgirl crush, like yeah. sweating.
Really?
You know.
Did you get the butterflies?
Yes, the butterflies. couldn't talk. And that just wasn't me.
Yeah.
So I was like,
this is something different.
Yes.
He's different from the,
yes.
the previous relationship.
Yes.
Maybe this is the one.
Yes.
So you guys... you know, decide to take it to the next step, mm-hmm. and he proposed to you.
Yes, so we dated for 4.5 years, which was a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready to be married long before he was.
Okay.
And so...
So there's one sign.
Oh, yeah. There
one
was,
red flag.
Yeah, there was a red flag,
yeah.
and we actually broke up during our dating process because... he said he felt pressured by me.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, we broke up. And then he came back and said, well, I think I want to get back together. And at that time, you know, I didn't know a lot about setting boundaries, but I did say, I don't want to pursue relationship with you unless you're serious
yeah.
about marriage.
Yeah.
This is what I want. I'm putting it out on the table. And so if you don't want marriage, like, this isn't going to work. And
I
he
think
said,
that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So he said, yeah. That is what I want. I didn't know it was going to be 2.5 more years before we got there. But
okay.
Yeah.
So kind of, this is what I want. If whatever it takes to get her right now.
Yeah.
And we'll figure this thing out.
Yeah. Dangle a carrot.
Okay. So 2.5 years later, you get married. You guys have kids.
Yes.
Tell me about that now. I know your story is that you did have miscarriage
mm-hmm.
with one of the babies. How many kids do you have in total?
I have 4 on this side.
Okay.
One waiting in heaven.
Yes. So you have 5.
Yeah. When we got married, I started grad school right away, so I was not interested
yeah.
in having kids at that time.
Yeah.
But shortly after, and I know we're going to get into this, but about 2 years into the marriage, I discovered that he had an affair.
Mm-hmm.
I came home one day and discovered all these emails on the computer to what turned out to be a coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just devastated, of course. But he said he wanted to work on the marriage. I did. And so we were in counseling and a lot of things. And actually, one of the bits of counsel we got was that I needed to travel with him.
Okay.
I kind of had that flexibility with my job at that time. And so we had gone out of town because this woman was going to be there. And so I went on this business trip with him and
okay.
met the woman. And it was a whole
so
ordeal.
So you met the woman
yes.
that he had an affair with.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm swallowing right now. Like, okay, how did that go over? Because you've decided I'm working this out with my husband. We
right.
have a family. He says he wants to work at it. And like a couple would do, they would try to work at
right.
it. But she's not leaving her job. He's not leaving his job.
Right.
Point blank, period. So we got to figure out a way to coexist.
Right.
So you meet this woman.
Yes.
And...
It was very awkward. I had actually had a conversation with her on the phone prior to meeting her.
Mm.
So it wasn't like it was my first time talking to her, but there was a dinner and I ended up sitting right next to her at the dinner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, we didn't have kids. But that whole trip, I cried. I was emotional. I just felt like... And I was like, wow, why is this impacting me so much?
Yeah.
But when I came back, I found out I was pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was with the first baby.
That was the first baby.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And, you know, it was okay, do we want to make this work? Now it's not even just about us.
Yeah.
You know, we're having kids. Mm-hmm. And so we both said that we did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that... things happen because obviously he was traveling and things happen. People make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to the place of, okay, we're going to work this out. And so you did.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have baby number 2, baby number 3, and then you get pregnant again and you lose this one.
Mm-hmm.
How was that ordeal and how did you overcome that?
It was devastating because it was my first experience with grief up close and personal. Mm-hmm. I had lost my grandparents, mm-hmm. but they were grandparents. Yeah. They were older. Older people pass away. Yeah. So it wasn't a shock or a horror, you know. So this was my first experience with something so personal to me. Mm-hmm. I had been trying to get pregnant and couldn't, mm-hmm. which was unusual because, like I said, the first time I wasn't even trying to get pregnant, right. and I got pregnant.
Right.
The second time we said, okay, we want to have a baby, I was pregnant within a month.
Right.
Third time, same thing.
Right.
Feel like the Lord saying it's time, yeah. it was time. This time, it just wasn't working out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had... been trying a number of different things, and it's a struggle when you deal with infertility after you've had kids, because
wow.
there's this wrestle of, am I being ungrateful?
Mm.
It's not like I don't have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Am I being ungrateful to say that I want more, and that my heart is breaking because I can't?
Because I can't.
And so,
you're asking probably 1,000 questions to yourself and God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I got to the point where, okay, God, if this is not what you want for me, thank you. Like, I'm grateful for
mm-hmm.
these three that I have, and I'm going to pour myself into these three. And right when I reached that point, surprise, I was pregnant.
Wow.
So I had just, you know, made this
promise. Doesn't that always happen?
Yes.
Though? Right when you surrender.
Yes.
It's
yes.
like, boom.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't need you to be in control. I don't need you to ask
yes.
me all these questions. I just need you to trust and believe.
Yes.
And right when you give it to him.
Yes.
Then here he comes.
Yes.
How far along were you in the pregnancy?
I was between 6 and 8 weeks. So
okay.
it was still very early.
Mm-hmm.
But because I had waited so long, you know, it was like finally getting to this mountaintop
yeah.
that I had decided I didn't need to climb anymore.
Right.
But like the Lord taking me and putting me there,
right.
you know, and then to end up losing that pregnancy, I can't explain the depths of pain that it took me to.
Right.
But I had just read this book
mm-hmm.
called Fire Tested Faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about, you know, how do you know when your faith is authentic? You don't know until it's tested in the fire. And so it was all these stories of people who had gone through these tremendous faith tests
mm-hmm.
and come out on the other side. And so, you know, in that, I feel like God does prepare us so many times for things that we're about to walk through.
Right.
I thought about that book a lot. And so I've always been a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of person,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't this time.
You could not.
I could not. And I just had to, of course, I still had to take care of the other three.
Yeah.
But on the weekends, that was my grieving time.
You were grieving on the weekend. So you're saying that in that, because you were prepared for it,
mm-hmm.
you know, after
mm-hmm.
trying for such a long time,
mm-hmm.
And to get pregnant, and then all of a sudden to suffer this loss, it had to be devastating.
Yes.
Because you want something so badly, and then you feel like it's taken away
yes.
from you. And so how long did you grieve over that? And I'm not saying you never stop.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying in that deep mourning.
Let me see.
Because you're saying that you would function as your mom and do your mom duties and mm-hmm. love your babies. But then just trying to mourn and heal on your own, you really couldn't show it to them.
Right.
Right?
Right. I would say it was a good 3 months
mm-hmm.
of, and I'm not talking about like, oh, I need a tissue because I have tears. I'm talking about laying in the bed, soaking my pillow,
wow.
weeping and crying.
So you're depressed?
I think so,
mm-hmm.
but not to the point where it was clinical, but
mm-hmm.
just it was just a healthy grief.
Okay.
I think I was just going through a healthy dose.
And there
of grief.
Is a difference of
yes.
you having healthy grief.
Yes.
And being diagnosed clinically depressed.
Because right, I've been there too. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I knew this was just like a healthy grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was in worship. I would help lead worship at church. Mm-hmm. And I was laid out, spread eagle on mm-hmm. the floor. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, God, I'm like, nothing's going to change my worship in this. I am hurting. My heart is broken. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is the cruelest joke you could play on me.
Wow.
But nothing's going to change my worship. So I'm face down.
Fire tested. Babe,
yes.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'm face down on the floor. And I felt like the Lord said, you will get pregnant again.
Mm.
And then, of course, then I really started to weep and wail. And I remember the lady that led the Bible study, like, leaned over, like, are you okay?
Right.
And I was like, yes. You know, yeah. I just heard the Lord tell me I'll yeah. have another baby. And so, and I did. But
you did. Now, how did your husband handle the loss of the child? Because I know it's different for us women because we're carrying the baby.
Right.
And we know that the fathers are important and they support. But it's a different connectivity when you have a human being inside of you.
Yes.
Things that you can't explain to,
yes.
You know, a person who has not had that experience. Yeah. But because it's both of your baby.
Yeah.
How did he react to it? Was he supportive of you? I mean,
he tried to be. I think he did the best that he could yeah. at the time. He would just let me cry on the weekends. You know, he would take the other kids and mm-hmm. do things with them. I did feel very disconnected from him in that. And I even asked him, like, are you sad about this? Are mm-hmm. you grieving? And he was like, you know, I am grieving. Men and women just grieve differently.
They do.
And so, but my grief was so huge. It was like, I can't argue with you about your
right,
grief. You
right.
know, I
And you
just,
can't really compare it.
Yeah.
Because that wouldn't really be fair.
Right.
Because he didn't have anything growing inside
right.
of him.
Right.
So to be like, okay, babe, we lost a baby. We, you know, men are always trying to find resolution.
Right.
To a problem.
Right.
So they may not always understand the emotional
mm-hmm.
sensitivity that goes with something
mm-hmm.
so traumatic as that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm gonna take your kids. You get better. We'll be okay.
Yes.
Most men think that way.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I understand you. You're like, okay, I'm over here in the bed on weekends and you're still functioning.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But we all mourn in our own way.
Yes.
So you hear God speak to you and the Lord says, you're going to get pregnant again.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens.
Yeah,
you
I
do.
Did.
You had that mm-hmm. baby number four.
Yes.
You know, besides the one in heaven, but
yes.
the baby number four. What do you enjoy most about being a mom?
Ooh, I feel like it's the best job I've ever had.
It is.
The fact that God would entrust me to mold and steward the lives of these, I call them amazing little people.
Yeah.
They have taught me way more than I probably could ever teach them.
Mm-hmm.
Just about, because I was such a old soul, I don't know that I was ever really a kid.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yes, yes.
And
I know.
So it's like getting to live my childhood with them.
Yes.
And
yes.
so that and just watching them grow
yeah.
and their own personalities. And I feel like it's taught me so much about the heart of God as a father and just in the way that he does things. You know, we as parents like to take credit for our kids when they're great. And then, of course, when they're not, we blame it on the spouse. But...
Yeah, you get that from the other side.
Yes.
Because mine is perfect.
Right. But they come here. I mean, my
yeah.
daughter, the way she is now, she came here like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it was nothing I could take credit for, nothing I could say, oh, yeah, I taught her that. No, she came here like that. And just, you know, in Proverbs, when it says to train up the child in the way they should go, it's like
mm-hmm.
according to how they're bent, according to how the Lord has made them. And so that's been my focus as a mom. It's like, what gifts and talents do I see in my kids? And how can I nurture those and help those to flourish, to help them be their authentic selves,
mm-hmm.
not the storybook that I wrote when I was 18
mm-hmm.
about my 2.5 kids,
yeah.
you know, but to just see how God has made them and to be a part of that, I feel honored. Yes.
I feel the exact same way you feel, that he would choose me and entrust me to manage his children.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that I could bear witness to such amazing individuals, because I have four kids too. Yeah. See there? They're going another connectivity. Another connectivity. Boop, boop, boop. But yeah, it's the best feeling in the world. It's the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so blessed. I always tell my son, but this is extended to all of my kids, like, if I wasn't your mom, I would want to know you.
Yes.
You know? And when you watch your product, your work.
Yeah.
You know, and you watch it flourish and grow, and they become good, kind souls.
Yes.
That you'd have prayed over.
Yeah.
It's just the best feeling in the world. So I totally get it. Yeah. I totally get it. So you and your husband, you have four kids at this time. Now, you're going through the grief of, you went through that grief, mm-hmm. of losing a child. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, how was the marriage? Were y'all good? You know.
I thought we were.
All was good, because, you know, you went through your one little valley, and hey, you looks like the family is moving along. Mm-hmm. You know, you're working together. You are expanding the family. So what's going on? Because...
Yeah, it wasn't good, but I thought it was. I thought it was good. I did. I thought I was married to my best friend. Mm-hmm. I was even teaching ladies Bible study on just the power of forgiveness, mm-hmm. and how God can redeem, broken things, because going through the affair was so traumatizing. Mm-hmm. But to be on the other side and to know that, you know, here we were past 10 years of marriage. We said we had common goals for our children, that we wanted to leave a different legacy. I came from divorced parents.
Yeah.
His parents were never married. And just the opportunity to do something different for our kids.
Oh, yeah.
We had lots of conversation about that. And so... in no way am I saying it was perfect, but I really felt like I was married to my best friend.
You really felt that
way. I did.
So you're feeling one way, and obviously he's feeling another.
Yeah.
It is interesting how we can be in the presence of one another and not be able to really communicate our authentic feelings.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I'm, again, nodding my head over here to my twin, because it was the same thing even in my relationship. Well, my parents had me when they were graduating from high school, mm-hmm. so they weren't together, but I have a good relationship with my dad. My ex-husband's parents were divorced, and that was a common thing. Okay, we're going to make this work and mm-hmm. give our family, you know, something different that we didn't have. And I think for me, being one, a loyalist,
mm-hmm.
And number two, very strong will, that when I decide I'm going to do something,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it. But I also realized that I was doing things, even in a marriage that was imperfect, and mm-hmm. we're all imperfect beings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just
mm-hmm.
saying that we put on a real pretty facade for the public. And not that we didn't get along. I don't want to... belittle the union, because I had a good union, but it was more inconsistencies than consistencies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you make up your mind as a mother
mm-hmm.
that I want to give this to my kids,
mm-hmm.
it's not so much that I'm trying to give this to my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to give something to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do your work, because you're outside of that bubble now,
mm-hmm.
and you realize...
Right.
Huh, it was something going on with me too, because mm-hmm. I didn't say I was doing this for my spouse
mm-hmm.
or even for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it for them.
Mm-hmm.
That really can never keep a union together.
Yeah, I think
Do you think?
I don't think so. No. And for me, it was a combination of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought I'm doing a different generational leg, like I'm breaking curses mm-hmm. here. So it wasn't even about the people. I felt like that's what God called me to do.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
I felt like this is the mission God has me on. This is the purpose for my marriage. So even when I found out about the first affair, I was ready to go. I was like, deuces.
Right.
Like, yeah. You know, I think every woman has that as their non-negotiable.
Exactly.
Like, if you cheat, I'm out.
Yeah.
And I was ready to be out.
Yeah.
But I felt like the Lord said, no, you're not.
He said, be still.
Yeah, be still. Okay. I want you to fight for this marriage.
Okay.
So I'm the type of person where if I feel like God says so, it doesn't matter what else I hear or what I come up against, because God said so.
Okay.
And he's the authority of my life. Mm-hmm. And so that's where my heart was.
So your heart was there. And I get you, because I was like, okay, God don't like divorce and da-da-da whatever. And so I'm kind of on that same path, mm-hmm. but after doing some work,
mm-hmm.
I realized that, yes, I was listening to God, but I was also listening to myself, mm-hmm. and trying to will,
mm-hmm.
what I wanted God to help me,
mm-hmm.
do. Like, I was asking God for peace in my marriage when it just became where we could not work it out.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wanted the family,
mm-hmm.
to stay intact. And my thought prayer was like, okay, well, two parent home and da-da-da whatever. But at night, when I was crying by myself, mm-hmm. and praying to God, I was like, I just need peace. I need rest. I'm tired,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I really do believe, even though the marriage ended in divorce, God was answering that peace prayer.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I say that because I think sometimes, and I'm not saying don't pray for your marriage and your union. Please work it out, because I believe in marriage. I believe in family and unity. But sometimes you can believe that, but you can believe it with the wrong person.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we need to be aware of who we are in alignment with and mm-hmm. who we are not,
mm-hmm.
when you are having your prayers.
Yeah. And I mean, marriage has become such an idol,
mm-hmm.
That we hold it up even above God. And an author that I love is Leslie Vernick.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I heard her say this, she said that God cares more about the people in the marriage,
mm-hmm.
than he does about the institution of
marriage.
You know, it's that whole thing of like when Jesus came, the Pharisees were so concerned about the institution,
yes,
of the church,
yes,
that they missed the people of the church. And I think that happens a lot in marriage, that we get so caught up in the institution of the marriage, that somewhere in there we lose who we are.
Amen,
and we
sister.
Miss the voice of God and what he's calling for us to do.
Exactly.
And so, you know, one of the things I used to tell my ex-husband all the time was, I just feel like there's someone else in our bed.
Some of you may be nodding your head. You probably have that same feeling Andrea just shared with us. There's more to this story, so join me for part two next week. I thank you for taking the time to listen. I hope that you are learning as we listen, especially if you're traveling through this journey currently. I sincerely appreciate you guys. Have a beautifully blessed week. Until the next podcast, God bless.